We found the groove. Hey, what's happening? Another episode of Let There Be Talk right here, August 26th, Monday, in the beautiful Hollywood, California. Looks like it's another 95 degrees day out there, just blazing hot. Let's see what's happening with me over the weekend. I was invited to ride the new Harley Davidsons, the 2014s. That was pretty fucking cool. Thanks, Anaheim, Fullerton, Harley Davidson for having me down. They got new models. I rode Harleys for years, and then I just kind of got off them. And I got to say, I'm going to get back on it. Fucking rode the old grandpa one, the Ultra Classic. They made it water-cooled finally, and it was just kick-ass. Thumbs up to you guys, Harley. You rocked it this year. You did it, man. You finally came out of the dark ages. Water-cooled bike. It's pretty fucking good. Anyway, that was fun. Got to ride all over on the new bikes. What else did I do? I just went to Yosemite. I did something I never, ever do. I took 2 days off. That was fucking weird. It's hard to relax for me. I'm crazy. I just, you know, I got to do comedy every night. If I don't, I feel weird. But I took 2 days off, went up to Yosemite. It was beautiful up there to the hometown. They got a bad fire going up there right now. I hope they get that shit contained. It was bad. Anyway, get off of that stuff. If you want to come see me this week, I'll be all over town this week in Hollywood. I'll be in at the Comedy Store probably about four times this week. And let's see. Oh, if you listen to this today, go to Meltdown. Mark Maron's going to be there Wednesday night. And you live in L.A., go see Mark Maron. Love that guy. And it's pretty rare to see him in town. So if you can go see that, go see it. And upcoming shows, still tickets for sale. Still got some tickets left for the Largo show September 20th. Me and Sammy Obaid. Sammy Obaid celebrating his 1,000 days of comedy. Check that out. It's going to be great, September 20th. This episode's brought to you by Ironheart. Ironheart Clothing, if you don't know about them, you should check it out. Ironheart.co.uk, some of the best clothing on the planet. I wear it all. I love the denim. Ironheart, the works, motorcycle specialties, jeans, denim wear, original garments. There you go. Got the bullshit out of the way. Let's get into the show. I recorded this one about 3 weeks ago when I was in Vegas. When I was in Vegas, I did a few shows. Remember, I had Tracy Guns on. That was great. This guy's an old friend of mine right here. I hadn't seen this guy in, I don't know, about 13, 14 years. His name's Michael Kelly. He's not famous. You probably never heard of him, but that doesn't mean you don't listen to the episode, because what this guy did was something very unusual. He joined the Blue Man Group about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Plays in the Blue Man Group, played in the Blue Man Group for 12 straight years. You want to know what the Blue Man Group's about? What it's like to live in Las Vegas? You gotta listen to this, man. I mean, the Blue Man Group, you got to think about it. Like, what the fuck? Three blue guys, you know, millions of dollars. Millions. I'm out of it today. It's so hot. Millions of dollars. They got Blue Man Group in Boston, New York, Vegas. They got one in London. They have a Blue Man Group that tours all over the place, arenas. This shit is full blown. It's like a modern day Ringling Brothers circus or something. You know, it goes all over. Anyway, Michael Kelly, MK, played bass in my band for a while. Great guy, Bay Area dude. Sit back, check it out, listen to what it's like to be in the Blue Man Group. Thank you guys for tuning in. I love all you guys. You've been just so amazing lately. Killer emails, positive stuff. I'm just fired up that you guys love the show. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Tell a friend about Let There Be Talk.
Save the tip of my-
All right, here we are, another episode from Las Vegas. Got an old friend here. I don't know, how long have we known each other?
I think about 20 years.
Man. Yeah, right?
I think going on, because it was the early 90s when we were playing, right?
Or
the
mid-90s? I guess so.
Shit.
Introduce yourself.
We were just asking,
because I was like, what last name are you going by now?
It's Michael Kelly is the full name, but for years people have been calling me MK, which started as kind of, you know, a cheesy point and wink, hey, MK.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and some people say DDR to me.
Yeah,
DDR?
DDR has been happening for years. Yep. So it kind of one of those things that, like a lot of things, you know, when you're, like we used to say, when you're fucking around in rehearsal, don't fuck around too much because you play how you rehearse. You know, you end up being tempted to do something that you would do jokingly. And that's how the name stuck, too. It was just sort of like, starts as a gag. Next thing you know, you're MK.
Yeah, so yeah. That's
the
MK.
Story. That's the story.
There you go. There was another MK, right? Remember back in the day? He was like a Varney dude, like a crazy guitar player.
Some guitar cat.
Yeah, yeah. Remember MK? I remember that guy for a minute.
I don't even remember. I must have blocked it out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask Varney about that guy. Yeah. So we're out in Vegas.
Yes.
I did Tracy Guns a couple days ago. The reason I'm having you on, well, for one thing, we haven't seen each other in 20 years.
It's been a while.
We both grew up in the Bay Area. We played together.
Yep.
And we got some funny stories. But one of the things is you played in the Blue Man Group for 12 years.
Yes. I came out of the Bay. You know, you were there. We were there.
Yeah. And I don't even remember what happened. Like, we were playing together. You played bass in my band for a minute,
right?
Yep. Tulane Blacktop.
Yep.
Who was on drums? Dennis?
We had a couple different drummers. We had Dennis for a couple gigs.
Yeah.
Who was it after that?
I don't know.
Who did we end up being the main guy?
Dana.
Dana.
Oh, okay.
It was Dana.
There you go.
I know it was Dennis and Dana, and I'm trying to think if there was a third cat.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's the problem with the bands.
Yeah,
you know
right?
what I mean?
Yeah,
nine dudes in a band.
And I was one of several bass players.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, who knows what incarnation it was in, you know, Deep Purple, Mach 4, or,
yeah,
you know.
Right. But always fun to play with you.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, that ruled.
We have that classic story. We were playing Nile Station in Fremont.
Best. Yeah.
Which was like was an amazing place for a while, and Fremont had a place called Nile Station.
Yeah, like a cowboy biker bar.
It was a biker bar with a lot of powder going around.
Oh yeah,
yeah. There was one period of time where it was just incredible for about 4 years, maybe. Flame was the kings of Niles.
And Dennis played that gig that we did there.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's why we were playing there, because Dennis was playing with us for a while. But remember that we were backstage. I barely remember the story, but we were the middle band, I guess, right?
Yeah, I told this story relatively recently, but I'd like to hear your version of it, too.
Am I
going to tell it?
Yeah, because my problem is my brain is pretty trashed.
Well, I was sober back then. You're sober. You've been sober for a long time.
Yeah, right?
On and off.
Since 92, but still, I smoked a lot of weed about 10 years ago. I was smoking weed in Tulane Blacktop anyway.
Okay, well, that was before I was doing much of anything, because I was the kid in that band. You know, I was a little young.
And you were like a Christian rocker back then, right?
You know, that's a weird thing. I wasn't at all, but I liked King's X, and
I thought you were a Christian guy.
You know,
King's X, and
I liked that.
Jimmy Arsenault was heavy Christian guy.
Yeah, that wasn't my
soldier.
That wasn't my thing though.
Right,
that was never our deal. We did do rock that was kind of
spiritual.
A little self-serious, actually, in retrospect. You know, it was kind of like, it was a little too, I listened to some of it relatively recently. I was up at my folks' house in Oakland, and I found a demo, and I put it in the, you know, cassette demo from back in the day, and it was kind of cringeworthy. I was like, ooh.
What was the name of your band?
Ooh, it's called The Carnival.
Oh, that's right.
And it was
three-piece band.
Three-piece band. It was a little too serious for what in retrospect. And we were kind of right in that middle ground between, kind of right when Alice in Chains was kind of doing its thing, like the Dirt record. It was kind of right in the early 90s. Where it was a little hard to still be a rock band with long hair. I mean, you remember this era.
Yeah,
it started getting a little complicated. And we were sort of too hard rock for, like, the alternative thing and not alternative enough. You know, we weren't alternative enough for the alternative Nirvana clique.
Right.
We were a little too
just
metal.
Gray area.
Yeah, gray area. Just didn't work, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And the songs were, you know, wanted to make a statement, you know. It was like, since then, my songwriting has really become much more, you know, just trying to write a great tune, you know, a great song,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And really not trying to make a grand statement of anything. And I remember when we were working together with Tulane,
yep.
You know, Jerry did a lot of the writing. You and him were the primary writers in that band.
Right.
And that sort of, you know, Tom Petty, you know, sort of American rock and roll.
Yeah, well, I think Wildflowers came out. So I don't know if it was later or around that era.
Yeah.
But I think that either you were, as you get older, you either quit playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, because you come out and you're playing dirty rock and roll or glam rock,
right.
or Aerosmithy,
sure.
stuff, whatever you're playing in the 80s. And then they had other bands in the 80s, you know, you got like Pixies and that kind of shit going
right.
on. But we were more into the rock,
yeah.
you know, Guns N' Roses and stuff.
Yeah.
And then after that kind of dies, grunge hits.
Yeah.
And then there's just kind of this weird area where you're kind of like, well, I love music. And you start getting turned on, I think, into stuff that you didn't want to listen to before.
Kind of the more straight ahead song oriented
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, like Grateful Dead, the Tom Petty.
Yeah.
You know, Springsteen really hit
it,
me.
It goes,
you know?
Back to the songs and it, at some point. You know what I mean? Because there's so much, especially with the rock when you're younger.
Yeah.
It's about the live thing, it's about your cock and balls, and you want to, you know, it's
yep.
kind of cock rocky and kind of cocksure.
Get your shit out.
Yeah,
you know?
That's kind
just
of what
like,
it's
yeah.
about. And you kind of start to, you know, you're writing tunes kind of for live, the live thing too.
Yeah, yeah.
You want rockers, you know.
Yep.
And so, you know, again, like I said, you know, when I was writing younger too, you got something to say, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where and maybe you don't have all the experience about life experience or love experience or stuff that comes with a little more wisdom.
Right, right. It's like me doing comedy now. If I did comedy back then,
it doesn't work.
It would just be like, hey, you know, how about chicks? I'm single.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You know what I mean? With it's roommates.
Roommates.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
crazy, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
That?
So you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of that. So when you're young and you're sort of idealistic and you're writing these tunes, you're trying to make a statement, you know, or some shit like that. And it just, it wasn't that happening in retrospect, but you have to go through it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, nobody looks back at their early bands and said, this is great.
Yeah. I had it all figured out.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're some of the lucky ones like Ryan Adams or something come out of the gate. You're like, what the fuck? Guy has 60 or, his first band, Whiskey Town.
Yeah, just
and
hits.
You're like, God
yeah.
damn, these guys are good.
Yeah.
How old are they?
Yeah.
You know, but they had a lot of good stuff to listen to.
Yeah, we were definitely rock, Bay Area rock, man. That
yeah,
was
Bay
our
Area
shit.
Rock.
That was our thing.
It's a whole different breed too from LA rock.
Yeah, totally.
It was weird because you wanted to be LA, but you weren't.
Yeah, we kind of did. Yeah,
but then we had Metallica, which was our crown jewel.
It was, but it was heavier than the music that you or me did. We weren't thrash guys. That was the thing too. We felt
I wanted to play thrash.
It was heavy duty for me, man. I saw Metallica and Y&T and Yngwie and Scorps that day on the green. Metallica was like one of the first bands, and I was like 13.
Beautiful day.
It ruled.
Yeah, beautiful day.
Totally ruled.
Stage is a giant scorpion.
It was so metal.
Yeah,
I
mean,
loved it.
People were tearing up the fucking throwing the laundry of Metallica.
I loved it.
There's
ruled.
Cliff Burton and all his glory up there.
I loved
fucking
it.
Fucking Morley pedal just rocking for him.
The bell bottom bassist in full effect.
Right there, I was telling somebody, I think it was, I don't know who it was, I was talking to somebody on the podcast, but that solidified Metallica.
It was the changing of the guard, I think. That show, you know, as much I love Y&T, but that was kind of their I was post Summertime Girls, and Rat, it was the Invasion of Your Privacy tour, you know.
Metallica was just kind of like, those were dudes we knew, it's like I just talked to that guy last night,
just a few years older, and a whole new thing was happening,
playing to 60,000 people.
It was badass,
and you're just going like, well, those guys made it,
it's on.
I mean, you know, when someone makes it from your fucking same club you play every day,
they were at the Stone all the time,
every day, man,
the Mab,
and
the
you just
Stone.
Go, fuck, there they are,
yeah. It ruled. It was a heavy. It was a great era, but I sort of looking back, because, again, I was sort of in that gray area, missed out a little bit. I didn't because the music was there. My friends dug it, but it was a little too heavy duty. And looking back, that's actually pretty tame.
You listen
to Metallica, that stuff, it kind of more sounds like Maiden or something, just a little tougher, like Scorps, like the early 70s Scorps with Uli.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of like He's a Man, She's a Woman. You know that riff? That's like the Scorpion.
Love Drive shit.
Yeah, that kind of heavy duty stuff. It wasn't that far beyond that.
Right.
But at the time, it was kind of a big jump. It was like, wow, that shit's fucking heavy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's music's weird, and I think it all comes down to chemistry.
Yeah.
If you have the right guys, fucking lightning hits, man.
Well, it struck twice for them, too, because they had they got Jason Newsted in there.
And he, Black Album.
He just kept it going. It
was, and Justice, I love. Justice is one of my favorite records.
People love that record,
I love it. A lot of people don't like it. I think it's cool. It's like prog metal.
Yeah, that was a weird thing for me, too. It started the technical elements of it where they were cool and it was heavy. It just, because I did come from the Kiss and Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And being the East Bay, the Y&T, the Journey, that kind of straight ahead rock, which I'm actually even more fond of now than ever.
Like, yeah, I love rock, man.
You know,
I mean, this podcast is all about rock and comedy and movies, but
that's kind
of, I mean, I could talk hours of rock, I had Tracy Guns on, and it's just like, there it is, a picture of he and I at the Stone backstage, 1989.
Yeah, man.
And then we took a picture together yesterday, and I'm like, we're still alive. Well, we're both on stage still.
That's what I was thinking, because I went and saw the Scorps a few years back, maybe a year or two, and we were, James Kotak was there. He's a buddy of the Blue Man Band. I got some, over the years, that's the thing, too. One of the coolest things over the years was having bands that you went and saw come see you. And that was one of the nicest things with Blue Man Group. And it was really humbling and really kind of brought the whole thing full circle. When
seeing the Scorps?
Well, having them come see us.
Oh, yeah,
We had Rudy and Kotak come see us play. And we snuck Rock You Like a Hurricane into the one of the bits where the Blue Man played it on the tubulums, on the tubes.
I interviewed them when they got inducted on the Rock Walk.
Oh, yeah, cool.
I put their hands on it.
Yeah.
And me and Lon Fren interviewed him like fucking for an hour. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They came and saw us, and then the next night we went and saw them.
Yeah.
And it was like, same thing with Judas Priest. The guys from the Priest, Def Leppard, Judas Priest, all these guys, Paul Stanley.
Yeah.
Paul Stanley's coming into our dressing room to say hi to us.
Now, hold on. We're jumping forward, though. Before you get to Blue Man.
Yes.
Let's finish the story on the...
Oh, yeah, shit.
Yeah.
We digress. I digress.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's all good.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah. All right.
I have a couple stories about that night.
We're
at Nile Station in beautiful Fremont, California. Yeah. Wonderful biker bar. Great joint.
Yeah,
and again, I'm a little on the young side. I think I'm in my early 20s.
How old are you now?
I just turned 40.
Okay, yeah, so I'm 47.
You guys were a little bit of a generation.
Well, Jerry was way older.
Yeah, Jerry's older, and you're in the middle. And because when you guys were playing, you guys were headlining your band, Ghost Town, was headlining the Stone on Saturday nights.
Yep.
My band was opening on a Tuesday.
Right. I got to.
So that was what was happening. And as you get a little older, things you catch up a little. There's a big difference between a 22-year-old and a 15-year-old and a 22-year-old, then a 22-year-old and a 29-year-old.
Yeah. There's like real drugs going around.
The stakes are higher.
There's chicks.
Yeah.
You're just like, whoa, these guys are like what I read about in Circus Magazine.
And that's kind of what was happening. Yeah. So I'm sitting at the bar with King after sound check, right?
Yeah.
And this was an era where both of us had big beards.
Oh, that's right.
And we had relatively substantial noses, King and I.
Yeah.
And I had a leather duster, a big derby on, like down to the knees. And a brown leather hat.
Yeah.
And Jerry's look was, I think, in a straw hat and another brown leather jacket. And we're sitting there, and Dennis from Flames sitting at the end of the bar, and he says, some guy's talking to me. He's like, oh, yeah, that's my bandmates down there. He's like, what? And the guy goes, what? Those guys? Oh, they look like they make moonshine. So that was the start of that night.
It's a great look.
Yeah,
right?
It was a heavy look. It was
moonshine.
Yeah, we were moonshine.
First of all, who uses that word in 90s?
Yeah, that guy was way ahead. White Lightning, all that shit.
Yeah, Lightning. Yeah.
So that was sort of kicked off the evening, and I was like, we do look like we can make moonshine. Moonshine rock.
Moonshine rock.
Delivering the good with some moonshine rock. Mm-hmm. Niles Station in Fremont.
Gonna play some moonshine.
Moonshine Rock.
It was, you know, it must have been early 90s anyway. So dig it. So we're hanging out. We sound check, and there's no place to go. We're, you know, in Niles, you know, a little outside of Fremont or whatever the deal is.
Yeah.
And so we're just hanging out backstage. And so we sound check, we're hanging around. And the first band guy gets his thing together. And this guy, you could tell it was amateur night right off the bat. You
right.
know? And although I was young, I'd been around because I've been playing clubs since I was a kid. And this guy was kind of more along the lines of where I started, you know,
right.
8 years of, but he was older. And so he had that sort of, he was a rookie, but he was too old to be a rookie.
For our
level of rock, you know, because right. we've been doing this for a long time, even though we were young.
Pros.
We kind of had that vibe a little bit,
yeah.
you know. And so this guy, it's pretty clear that he's a rookie. He's setting up his little crate combo, and he's got his 199 Kramer, you know, the sort of the Mick Mars version from the, you know.
The Guitar Center.
The Guitar Center special. Yeah. yeah. You know,
Guitar Center. You know, all Kramer's 199.
Exactly.
Will not be beat.
Yeah. He went and got that. Yeah. Or actually, his parents bought him.
That's right.
That deal. Yeah. And that was what was apparent, too. As he was setting up, you could see, you know, when you're young, you get your parents to come out.
Yep.
You know, your parents are coming to your show. You're trying to get 10 people in a bar, and you're young, and you don't really know people. You can even get into a bar.
Yeah.
So your parents are coming. They're bringing their friends. And you see, so I couldn't help but notice that was the dynamic with this show, right? So you look at some old dudes, and they're clearly like waving at this guy who's setting up his gear to be the front man of this weak-ass band.
Yeah.
And we kind of are the veterans in this situation, and we're pretty casual. We're hanging out. And so he gets his stuff set up, and you know, and he's looking real nervous. He's wandering around backstage. It's 8:55. He's going to be on at 9. Here yep. we go, you know.
Yeah.
And so he's looking around, and there's this ramp that goes up to the stage. You know, it's a loading ramp, you know, so you can get your big, heavy-duty rock gear on and off of the stage.
Yeah, we're in the dressing room. There's a ramp coming out of it.
Yes, and so here's this guy, and he's nervous. He's pacing. We're kind of, what's going on? And we're kind of, I'm kind of realizing what's going on. He's a new, he's just his first, it felt like a first gig.
Right. You know? I'm just having old Speed and cocaine flashbacks.
the vibe's like,
I don't even fucking catch this guy.
Yeah, well, you're gonna catch something in a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he puts on he's got his Nady wireless pack for a stage that's 8x8. You know, he's got his wireless ready to go, plugged into his 199 special Kramer into his crate combo, and takes a deep breath, starts up the ramp.
Yeah,
he stops and he turns to us, and he kind of looks us over. And here we are hanging out, you know, beards, long brown leather jackets and leather hats, getting ready to make some moonshine rock. And he looks at us and he goes, catch the steam.
Yeah. And then he walked on, he disappeared.
Yeah, then he
and I looked right at you and I go, did he just say catch the steam?
We had no idea what he was talking about.
Dude,
we
could have been one of the funniest things ever. And if you're listening, you're going, that's not that funny. No, it is. Because he looked at us dead on serious and said, catch the steam.
Which we have never heard before or since.
And we've said it ever since our whole lives.
It's become our bonding, you know, moment.
Catch the steam.
Dean and I. Oh, shit. So he goes on. You know, he walks on, you know, a couple of claps, and he proceeds to play an awful set. You know, just let me know. God forbid. I mean, whatever. It just certainly wasn't very impressive. But he told us to catch the steam, and so his whole set, we're cracking up. Did he really say that? There's no way he said
it. It was so fucking funny, man.
Oh, my God. Catch
it was
the
so
steam.
Funny. I think I commented on it, too, when we went on.
Well, you called him out. That's the thing. Do you remember this?
No.
Afterwards, this is Cloud. You're shit, too. This is your lead singer power. And This is your lead singer slash, you know, now you do your stand-up thing, your acting. There's a thing, you know, because I've sang in fronted bands, but there's a different thing to be the lead singer guy.
Yeah.
And with it comes a certain gravitas. You got a certain, you know, thing that you can do. And you walked up to this kid after he got off the stage.
Yeah.
And you're all, hey, man, before you went on, did you tell us to catch the steam? You called him out. You totally called him out. And he kind of acknowledged it, as I recall. He's like, I don't know.
Kind of
looked down and walked away. But
yeah, some of those nights, man, of playing, people don't understand. Like, if you play in a band, the gold that you get from the hang is, especially San Francisco at the Stone.
You don't remember the gigs. You remember all the other
shit. I really don't. I remember probably about three good gigs, one being with the Bullet Boys. Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple LA Guns.
Sure.
Some headliner when you first start selling out, that kind of stuff you remember. But all the other stuff's pretty gray.
Yeah.
But you remember key stuff. Like I remember Fletch walking backstage and knocking some guy's $2,000 Jackson over, and the neck just snapped because it was on the other side of a curtain and he didn't know. Yeah. And the guy just came into our room with a guitar and two pieces, and he's like, who did this? and he's got to understand, like if you thought, like, we were living like GNR as far as, like, I mean, we were maniacs, you know? We'd be just like, get the fuck out of here, you know? Like, we were just crazy. Like, I can't believe I'm alive still.
Yeah, that's,
did some crazy shit, you know?
Yeah.
So what happens? We played for a while. I don't even know what happens. We were going through a lot of members, but,
yes.
But what... what lands you in Las Vegas? So you've been out here 12 years
now. I've been out here 12 years. After we did our thing, I did my thing, the Carnival, and that was that. You know, again, it was a little self-serious, but it was kind of what you do in your first band.
Yeah,
you
gotta
learn some lessons. Got out of that. Rocked with you guys for a while. I was kind of floating around. Ended up joining forces with some guys in San Francisco, putting a band together called Magnified.
Yeah, I remember that.
We did it. We did a deal with. What the hell were we on? TVT.
Yeah, I remember them. That's Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails thing, and Seven Dust, too, I think.
That's right.
So we did a record with them, and that, you know, like, as usual, record came and went. It happens. And so after that, I was auditioning for different projects, going back and forth from L.A., from Oakland, from the Bay.
Right.
And, you know, Blue Man Group was auditioning. That's all there is
like,
to
where did you hear about it? Like,
I saw it in the Weekly. It was in the Weekly.
LA,
I still
San
have the
Fran
ad.
Or LA?
San Fran. I still have the ad, actually.
And what did it say? Looking for musicians?
It said musicians wanted...
Now, let me, before you go here...
Yeah.
Was Blue Man Group brand new when you were for audition?
It was in New York. Boston and Chicago.
Okay. I don't remember. I've never seen Blue Man Group. I just thought it was a drum thing.
It isn't just a drum thing. There's the three Blue Men. And
What is Blue Man Group?
Blue Man Group is three guys, bald and blue. It's
same guys?
Originally the three guys. They realized at one point that, you know, I think the story that I heard is at one point, I think it was the Penn and Teller guys kind of were like, hey, you know, you don't have to be the only ones doing this.
Oh, yeah, Kiss style.
Yeah, do it Kiss style, you know, kind of farm it out. And once that sort of light went off, they realized, wow, we could do this. But they were always very careful to maintain creative control. They might have.
Right, they own the whole formula.
They own the whole thing, and to become a Blue Man is still a very, you know, tedious process.
Right.
It's really difficult. They have a very specific type that they want physically and a very specific skill set. They they have actors who can drum a little bit and drummers who can act a little bit. Sometimes you got to find that balance.
Right.
And
but what is it? Is it music?
It's hard to describe. It's a theater show. It started off in a very small theater off of Astor Place.
Right.
And it started real small. So it has this energy of these three bald and blue men who kind of are banging on things you wouldn't usually bang on, PVC pipes.
Right. Kind of like those street drummers at the subways in New York back in the day.
They kind of took it to an art level, and that's kind of what it comes from. Really, it has an artistic angle that they have. That the main guys, Chris, Matt, and Phil, Chris Wink in particular, has a background in art. So a lot of the stuff really was kind of commentary on modern art and what is it? What is art? It kind of has that Michel Duchamp question of what is art.
Well, you can see some Warhol, you can see some Devo
and Klein
in the
and
look,
other stuff,
and some. You know, Talking Heads.
They're heavily influenced by the sort of pop art movement. So,
right, gotcha.
So kind of making art and making music out of things that you wouldn't necessarily think of doing so with. So using PVC piping, you know, doing canvases and doing spin canvases while spitting, you know, colors onto them.
Spitting paint?
Yeah, at times.
Paint in their mouth?
Yeah. So there's a lot of, there's paint, there's color, there's tribal rhythms. And that was sort of a goal, too, to tap into sort of the primal element of people. That's where the drums came from.
Right.
And then then kind of for a community experience, kind of an around the fire drum thing to get kind of cut through the modernity of
some
things.
Burning Man shit.
Kind of is. kind of is. But I think that Burning Man is very similar vibe wise. Although right. although Blue Man predated it.
So while you got three guys up there,
yes,
you've got a band. Are they in the dark? Are they blue?
We're up in a loft, and we have paint that is. Black light reactive. So we have this paint. We do tribal paintings on our face.
You had to paint yourself.
Yes, we paint ourselves up.
And do you get to pick your thing you want?
Yes, so long as you're not doing Gene Simmons or something. That's
right, yeah, yeah. King Diamond.
Yeah, no King Diamond.
That'd be dope if you was like, well, they got King Diamond in the blue man grub. Grandma! Yeah, yeah. So you read the... you read the ad in the SF Weekly. What's it say? Bass player wanted?
It says musicians wanted. And as I recall, it says ability to rock a must. And
ability to rock a must.
And I said, well, I can do that.
Well, you've been told to catch the steam.
If I can catch the steam, I can rock.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
You know, so.
So what do you do? You come out to Vegas?
I go down and audition in San Fran.
Where at?
At Lennon Rehearsal Studios.
Oh, yeah, I know
at
the Lennon, place.
Where we rehearsed anyway. That was the thing, too. We were rehearsing there. Some kind of was... I kind of think if we didn't rehearse there, I might not have gone. I was sort of comfortable about it.
Yeah, it's there.
I go there all the time. I know where to park. I mean, it sounds silly.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
It's San Francisco, man. I don't want to get a fucking ticket. If I got to park on Upper Haight or on Broadway or some shit, I'm going to drive around for an hour trying to find a place to park.
$65 ticket.
Get towed.
Some crackhead fucking steals your bass.
I'm up there holding my Rickenbacker, you know, on Mission. I don't need that shit.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I go in there and there's a big line of people. You know, a lot
big
of,
line? Like, you know, what are you talking about?
Around the block, a couple hundred people waiting.
Wow.
And the thing was, they have these cats, you know, with the turtleneck and the ponytail and the six-string bass up to the chest, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, those cats.
Yeah, that kind of Primus stuff that was going on back then.
He didn't get the gig.
Right, right.
Yeah. So
what was the audition? You walk in. Who's in there? Are the Blue Man guys in there?
No, it's their music directors from New York who
are
a savvy and pretty street smart bunch of dudes. They were music guys. They're rock guys, and that was the thing about the Blue Man thing. They really wanted it to have a rock edge.
Yeah.
These days it's, you know, I have to say it's not quite as rock.
Right.
It's not quite
as rock's
rock.
Not hot anymore. So you got to evolve, right?
It's a little.
What is it, like a fusion jazz thing?
It's certainly not jazzy, but it's definitely a little more technical than it used to be. And they used to really want the. And they still want it to rock, but it's just a little more technical than it used to be.
So you go in there, and the guy's in there, and do you play? Like
we do a song called we did Drum Bone, which is a piece in the show. It's a simple three.
Did they
chord.
Give it to you ahead of time?
No. There's no reading. We don't read. They just played it once and say, okay, now you play. And so they play it, you play it, and that's it.
Wow.
And audition lasts 3 minutes. They say thanks. You say that's it. They say that's it.
Wow.
And then,
were they filming you or anything?
Yeah, they're taking pictures and doing that whole deal.
Yeah.
But it's such a simple song. It's kind of an exercise, really, in simplicity and following direction.
Yeah.
Because the guy with the six-string bass is going to do some funky
jam. He's
going
to play it too much.
Or some lead guitar player is going to start soloing over that. And they go, wait. Just play what we just told you to play.
Yeah, right.
It's great. Dan 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 dan.
That's what it is.
Dan 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 dan. Ba gun gun dun 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 dun.
They showed it to you once, and then you got to play it.
They show you once, play it. You play it back. Say, great, thank you.
And wow.
If you can get through it without under or overplaying, maybe you get called back.
Right.
And I got called back. So.
So you got called back, and then what? How many guys are at the callback?
Well, they went through about, they didn't, for whatever reason, and there's actually still some underlying resentment for some of the musicians in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want anybody in Vegas. They came to Vegas. They set up the show. They brought everybody, imported everybody from other cities.
That's weird.
Yeah, they for whatever reason, the guys in New York weren't really digging on what the musicians in Vegas came. Maybe they came to the audition, didn't want to play the chords. Maybe they overplayed. Maybe they underplayed.
Might have been a little meth. You know, they come in and play it too fast.
Way too fast. Yeah, desert rock style.
Desert rock. Guy just comes in, Caius with the fucking Morley pedal. No shoes.
Who knows what happened?
Yeah.
But they weren't feeling it. And so they went to L.A., San Francisco, and Seattle.
Right.
And I don't think they got anyone from L.A. They got a couple guys, two guys from San Fran and two guys from Seattle, and out of a couple thousand.
And then they called you and said, you got it?
They called it and said, no, come to Vegas and play for our guys down here. So we had to do another round of
Did
auditions.
Did they fly
here.
You out for that?
Flew us out.
Oh,
and
dope.
This was, you know, I don't. This was with, it was me, Tim Alexander from Primus.
Oh, yeah, great guy.
Yeah, he came in. He and I were in the this wave of musicians that came in to do the Vegas show, which was, again, it was the new show, and it was just getting established.
Which hotel?
It was at the Luxor.
Okay. That's the pyramid, right? Yep. There, the pyramid, right?
The street, big black pyramid.
Yep.
And so...
Chris Angel, believe. That's what my view is right now. Yeah. Chris Angel. Chris Angel's Tommy Lee, right?
Yep.
Okay,
yep, that's part
joking.
Of the magic.
That's
trick.
A Holly, Vegas secret. Yes, okay, keep going.
And so
you come out here and you audition.
We audition, we get the gig, you know, it's cool. And then I find myself playing Zither in a giant pyramid. That's the story.
Zither. What's that?
It is a, well, our version of it was, it's a giant, it's sort of like what I'm sitting on right now.
Right.
It's, if you imagine a pedal steel guitar with the open chords, the open tuning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we have five.
That's what you were playing, the instrument?
Yeah.
Oh, you weren't playing bass.
Well, I did. I eventually played bass also.
Uh-huh.
But we played these sort of weird instruments. We would play Chapman Stick.
Oh, Chapman Stick. Remember that
played
thing?
Chapman
just the
Stick.
Hippie thing. And how about some didgeridoo?
Well, that was actually part of the sound that they wanted out of the Chapman Stick at the time with the wah pedal.
Chapman Stick was fucking for meth, right? That thing is so nutty.
It's a crazy instrument. It's got a zillion strings. We would
Side story. One time I was at Varney's house mowing his lawn, which I used to do because I fucking needed money. And some kid showed up, man. I remember he rode a Greyhound bus from Tennessee or something.
With
and was
stick?
At fucking Varney's front door. And the stick had just come out and ruled that thing. I think Varney signed him on the spot.
It's a very weird instrument. It has electric bass and electric guitar strings on it. And what Blue Man Group would do it is we would bow it. We would take an E string from a bass.
Right.
And we'd cut it to about a foot length, and we'd bow it and do 16 notes. Like, jigga, 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 jigga was the thing. And from what I understand, Mr. Chapman does not approve of Blue Man Group's usage of his instrument.
Yeah.
And so that's not how it's supposed to be played.
So you get the gig.
We get the gig.
And what are they say? You're moving to Vegas.
Yeah, move to Vegas. That was part of the deal.
Do they give you a lump sum of money to move to Vegas?
They paid for me to relocate. They put me up for a couple of months.
At the hotel?
For a week at the hotel. Then they moved me off the strip to an apartment, which was cool.
Right.
Gotta realize, again, I'm 20, I don't know, 27?
Were you fired up or were you just kinda...
I was super fired up, man. This world, because I was living in Oakland. My apartment got robbed.
Yeah.
You know,
Oakland was brutal back then.
You know, I was born and raised, so I was living off of Fruitvale, and so I went from this apartment. My band broke up. My apartment is ghetto.
No money.
You know, no cash. No man.
We never had money.
No
back
cash.
Then. Isn't that weird?
No cash.
No money ever.
None.
I don't
no
even
cash.
Know how we did.
No
it.
Cash. We were doing a day job. I was walking dogs. Yeah. In the Berkeley, Oakland and Berkeley Hills.
That's a good gig.
Walking, it totally rolled. Walking dogs and feeding cats.
Yeah, oh, God, that's not a good gig.
Well, no, it was cool. They just hide.
I'm only kidding. So you move out here.
Move out here.
And
it was great, man. I've been
What's the money like? Can you talk about that?
I don't know if I'm... Let me see. How can we do it? It was good money, put it that way.
Yeah.
It was good money. It was, tens of thousands of dollars,
A year or?
Yeah, a year. Yeah,
gotcha.
And we were on salary. And the whole thing was we moved.
And how many gigs a week?
Then we were doing seven.
We were doing seven
shows a week.
And 7 nights a week or two or something?
We would do doubles. There were doubles. At that point, we were doing 14 shows a week.
And now, how long are the shows?
An hour and a half.
And so you come in, you got to paint your face and stuff.
Yeah, and we learned, the thing was too, we had to learn these new instruments. I didn't just come in playing bass or guitar. That was the thing. We had to learn zither or Chapman stick.
Right.
And not only, so that was an interesting thing. I really did enjoy it. It's actually nice to talk about this. I haven't talked about this for years. I really thought about
it. It's cool
much.
Because I really want to know.
Yeah.
What the reason I think this show's important is... when you get out here in Vegas, and I'm 47 now, I never thought I'd be performing in Vegas.
Yes.
Because as we grew up, Vegas was Elvis.
It was schmaltzy.
Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
And all that. Now the new Vegas is coming, is here. And as I talked to Tracy Guns and stuff, Carrot Top's been here, I think, 18 or 15 years. Now, guys come out here like you.
Yeah, and you stay.
And you've worked. You get a gig, and you've been doing it 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
And what I'm trying to figure out is you get money and stuff's good, but you live in Vegas.
Yeah. It's really what you make of it, and that's the thing. When we moved here, we were all from different cities.
Right.
So we kind of...
And it was early on. Vegas was just starting to be good.
This is 2001. Circuit, I think, had one show at the time.
Right. You had the Pyramid. You got Mandalay Bay.
We were
like,
a new show.
It was old news still.
We were the first thing to come from New York.
Okay. How many seats are you guys doing?
We did... It was 1,200-seater. It was a 1,200-seater. The Luxor was 1,200. We did 5 years there.
Yep.
Venetian.
And all sold out.
Well, the thing, after I came, 9/11 happened.
Oh,
and so
wow.
If you want to talk about Vegas, you have to talk about the tourist deal.
That's right.
And you know, Vegas, you gotta travel to get to Vegas,
yeah,
man. And so the traveling is a big deal. So
yep.
With the planes the way they were and the fear that surrounded that for a little while, it was rough. We actually did not play that day. I was scheduled to play that night, and we didn't play.
Who wants to see Blue Man Group on the worst day ever?
It was rough. We did play the next night.
Right.
And the thing is also, Blue Man Group is tied to New York. We're a New York-based show.
Right.
So it really hit home for the company. It was difficult.
Yeah.
It was a dark day for the nation. And it was a dark day for Blue Man Group.
I had a guy on, Jeff Richards. He's a friend of mine. First day, he gets cast on Saturday Night Live.
Jason Sudeikis?
No. Jeff Richards.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so the first day he's on, he's walking to go to rehearsal, and that happens.
Yeah, Jesus.
So imagine your dream of being on Saturday Night Live, and then the next day you don't even know if you're going to be alive.
Yeah, it was heavy. It was rough.
Yeah, it's a heavy thing.
It was rough. My chick was out there at the time, too, living there, going to school.
That's fucking brutal.
It was hard.
It's
crazy. Was weird. It was rough.
So that happens, and that's right when you're here. So the show's slow for a while?
The show slowed down for a little while because just of you know...
Travel,
man. So, but to speak to the crowds, they were great, especially at the Luxor.
Right.
The Luxor.
Were you kind of flipping out? I mean, can the people see the band? I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like a dick.
We're in lofts. We're lit up by black lights. So
right.
We come on. We're behind a scrim, and that the lights come on, and then we're lit up for certain songs.
Right.
And the lights go out. The focus is on the Blue Men, and a lot of people.
Chicks? Are you getting chicks?
You know,
I mean, how can you get chicks? Because they don't know it's really you.
I had to really work hard to get chicks.
Yeah. No. Right?
It was rough. When we toured, we did arenas for a while. This is down the line. I did the Blue Men How to Be a Megastar tour.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah, that's way down the line.
So. You're working here.
Yeah.
You get your own place.
Yes, it rules. It's great. We're stoked. I got money. There's like we're in these community. I just been telling these stories lately too because we're in this you know, these apartment complexes down here. They have pools. There are no pools in Oakland.
There ain't no pools in Oakland.
There are no pools in Oakland, man.
That's a great record title, right?
It's real, bro.
Yeah.
So I'm like, shit, you know, I got some money in my pocket. I bought a Cadillac. I bought a 1983 Cadillac Eldorado.
Dope. Good car. Yeah,
with the Continental kit.
Yeah.
I grew up in Oakland.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm a bass player from Oakland.
Yeah.
So I get my car and I get my apartment. And it's like, you know, later on, I had saved money. I bought a house and had the pool. But
you bought a house?
I bought a house. Bought and lost the house.
Yeah,
Vegas got hit hard with that whole deal. But the pool was a big deal, man, you know. And eventually you get a house with a little recording studio in it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the rock dream. Now,
were you stupid with your money?
No. I'm giving my money.
Well, how'd you lose your house? Because you bought way too high?
Because I got divorced and had to give her half the money.
Oh, yeah.
That works.
There's a lesson there, listeners. Yeah. Don't fucking get married. I keep saying it forever.
It really, I got burned.
Why get married?
I got burned. Well, because I thought it was all coming together.
I could see you getting married out here in Vegas,
I'm a romantic,
right?
I'm a romantic.
You're what?
I'm a romantic.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got married when I was here. That didn't work out.
And where'd you meet her? Was she a car dealer?
I met her in L.A. I met her in L.A. doing a gig at Spaceland, actually, in Silver Lake.
And like a side band you had?
This was before I moved to Vegas.
Oh, okay. I got you. So anyway.
So, yeah.
So you're rocking some Blue Man Group.
It
starts to get big, right?
It rules, man. It rules. We're doing great. I love the Luxor. The Luxor days were really fun because we were all new to the city. And like I was saying, we all were from different towns, so we all really hung out with each other.
Yeah, that's cool.
We were renting houses. It really had a band vibe.
Yeah, like a brotherhood. You need that because you don't know anybody. buddy.
It really was. It was a brotherhood. And also, you know, again, dudes weren't married yet. Yeah. You know, and...
Was Tim in the band?
Tim was in the band.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Tim
okay.
was in the band. Tim was great. We'd all.
I mean, that had to be a money drop for him, right?
You know, I don't know. I can't speak to that exactly, but I do know that Tim's thing was that he wanted a challenge and he wanted to do some new shit, and he did the gig for a couple years and he split.
Oh, he only did it two.
Yeah,
okay,
you know, maybe one or two.
Now, did guys come and go in the Blue Man Group?
You know, they did, but not much. Like you were saying, man, that band. Yeah, man, we did 12 years. I think we lost a couple of guys.
Yeah.
But as far as willingly leaving that gig, it didn't happen much. I mean, I only left because I was injured.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to get into that in a minute. But so how does it move from Luxor to Etherhood? Tell me how Vegas works, because it seems like a show is red hot at Luxor. How does it move? Does another company lure it away with more money?
That's all there is to it. It's all about the cash.
Right, and is it a... bigger, did you move to a bigger room?
It was a bigger theater, bigger room. In retrospect, the Venetian didn't work out as well as I think they thought it was going to.
Right.
It did well, but it was an 1,800-seat theater with a big balcony. It was also at the Venetian, which is kind of a black hole for gigs. They also didn't work a lot with promotion with the band and the company, I should say.
Right, the Venetian now. Which one's that one?
Sheldon Adelson's place. And they run that pretty tight. You're kind of on your own, put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, if you notice all these big signs on the casinos, if you notice any deals, any package deals, there wasn't a lot of that coming from the Venetian and us.
Wow.
Towards Blue Man. So
why is that?
It's kind of the nature of that particular casino. It's also the nature of your deal. You know, what do you sign up for? Tour support. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get tour support. You got a video budget, you know, to put in rock.
Well, for them to move, it had to be more money, right?
That was the thought. I mean, I don't really know the inner workings of the business angle or what the deal was. You know, I play bass, man. So,
on bass.
But it sure had to have made sense to them on paper. Put it that way. But once they were in, they were in. It was a 7-year run at the Venetian.
So you do 5 at the Pyramid.
7 at the Venetian.
And then do you go somewhere else?
Yeah, they are now at the Monte Carlo.
And
the Monte Carlo is an MGM property, and so is the Luxor. See, what are the MGM and the
Monte Carlo has those great comedy shows, right?
I think so.
They got Ron White and all those guys, the aces of comedy. Is that there?
I'm trying to think of where that show is.
Yeah, aces of comedy is genius. But anyway,
yeah.
So you got the Monte Carlo. Is that a step down?
Yeah, you know, people kind of wondered about that. That was a question. And the Monte Carlo is a smaller casino. It's not one of the newest casinos.
Yeah.
The theater was a better size for us. That 1,800-seater was real big.
Yeah, so what was the size now?
I think it's back down to around 1,200. I think it's around there. And when you're doing, I mean, the thing is, Blue Man Group does 10, 14 shows a week.
Wow.
They do doubles. That's the whole thing. We do doubles. I think it's now at 8. 7:30 and a 10.
Wow.
And so they, you know, there are a lot of shows. And so, you know, doing, you know, an 1,800-seat theater,
yeah,
2 shows a night on a Tuesday. Come on, man.
There ain't no one going to that.
Come on, man. You know,
there ain't enough people here.
That just ain't going to happen. I don't care how great your show is. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So the new theater, I think, is a better fit. I never played a show at the Monte Carlo.
We're going to get into that in a minute. But now, do you ever burn out? Like, I mean, you're in Vegas.
You know, we talk about that. It's difficult. And here's the thing with that is rock bands and the normal cycle.
Yep.
Is you're writing it.
You're
doing a record.
Yeah.
And then you tour. And
yep.
then you're writing. You're recording. You tour. We didn't do that. We did. You know, we were doing, you know, 7 nights a week. You know, indefinitely.
Now wait a minute. So the Blue Man Group goes on a fucking an arena tour?
Yeah, man.
How did that happen?
Well, Blue Man, it's a big show. You know,
right.
Blue Man was big, and in 2006 or 7, I think it was 7.
Yeah, because I always hear about Blue Man everywhere you go.
There's a theater tour out right now.
Yeah.
There's a touring show in Australia right now.
Wow. Kind of like Stomp, right?
What's happened is, like, for example, Rock of Ages, you know, a lot of these shows, there's a touring show and then there's their sit down show.
Right.
Blue Man Group has a lot of sit down shows. There's New York, Chicago, Boston, Las Vegas, Orlando.
Wow.
Then there's a domestic touring group that just does, you know, is doing theaters. Like in San Francisco, they play the Orpheum or whatever.
Right, right.
And then there's, I think there's something in Europe now. There was something in Tokyo. There's a cruise ship.
Wow.
So it's huge now.
Yeah.
It's gigantic.
Those guys are just gazillionaires, huh?
I think they're doing pretty well.
Yeah, you think?
I think they're doing pretty well.
I mean, just imagine.
I know. Well, do them, just think about it for a second. If they're doing 10 shows a week.
Yeah.
In a call it a 1,000 seats a show and 100 bucks a ticket.
How much a ticket?
$100.
That's $100?
Something like that. I think they probably start at $59.99 and go up to $129.99.
Now, they're not papering the room at all, huh? It's actual.
I don't know these days. No, right. That's one thing. The casinos, not a lot of papering, man. It's really, from what I understand, it's not what it used to be.
Now, what about if you were in Blue Man Group? Could you just say, hey, I want to go play in the New York one for a while?
No.
That would have been dope.
No, but I did play the. I did the Boston one. I did the Boston show.
You went out there for a while?
Yeah, I went out there for a little while, and I went to Chicago to do some stuff.
You mean like when they're getting them started, they send you out to get them up and
coverage,
running?
If they need coverage.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It was great. Yeah, it was great. I didn't play the New York show, but this was especially early on when the money was real good. You know, the whole recession did hit the show a little bit.
Yeah.
And we noticed that, actually. When we did the touring, they realized that they could put on a big show. It was called How to Be a Megastar Tour. And the concept was the Blue Man Group kind of get a handbook of how to be a rock star.
Yeah, oh, that's kind of cool.
And so they kind of discover it in their Blue Man way. And they, you know, so they do all the posturing and they, you know, there's a big lead guitar solo where a guy comes out of what we call the rock box.
Yeah.
Where you go in being weak, then the box fills up with smoke and you come out, you know, wearing the reflective outfit with the disco ball.
Fuck, just come out Steven just Tyler.
You come out catching some serious steam, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
you come out steaming up the joint big
time. Yeah, yeah,
so, you know,
yeah.
That's what you do. You know, they kick out the door and you come out and just go to this ripping guitar solo. So it had all the trappings of a big rock show while kind of skewering it, you know, kind of making fun a little bit, but actually putting on an arena rock show. And as you know, my whole kick is I do come from that world of rock.
Arena rock.
And I love that shit.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So they said, well, we need a new bass player for the tour. How about it, MK? I said, that sounds great.
Yeah. So, now, how many dates did the arena tour do?
Boy, I think we did... I don't know, 100 something domestically.
Did you play Oakland?
We did San Jose. We did the Shark Tank. I know.
Shark Tank.
I wanted to play Oakland Coliseum.
Fuck the Shark Tank. You want to play fucking Oakland?
I wanted to play the Oakland Coliseum fucking bad. I played the Shark Tank. It was cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
It was great. Yeah. So we did arenas around the U.S. and Canada, and then we took the show to Europe.
Wow, you went to Europe.
Did Europe, and then we came back. Then we did Taiwan.
Uh-huh.
No, we did Korea. We did Seoul.
Oh,
we did Korea.
Dope.
Did Korea.
It's great over there, right?
Yeah, ruled. We did Korea for a couple of weeks. Then we came back, took a little break. Then we did Europe again. We did...
Now, when you're on the road, is this one still going here?
Always. Yeah.
Somebody filled in for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So then when you come off the road, you got your gig still when you come back?
Yes.
Wow, that's great, right?
It rules. I don't think that's the case anymore.
That's bummer.
These days, that's kind of what got a lot of people back to their home base gigs.
Yeah.
It's like, look, if you want to do the tour, we can't guarantee your spot when you return.
That sucks.
You know, but when we first went out, it was cool like that. So I was out for a couple of years. We did South America. We did Brazil.
Which Blue Man guys would go? The real dudes.
The real dudes don't do it anymore.
They don't do it at all anymore.
The original guys don't do it.
Wow.
No, they don't do it anymore.
They just sit back in penthouses in New York.
They definitely have their penthouses, but they are still working. That's the thing. They really do. They're still writing new stuff. There's new shit in the new Monte Carlo show. Always new shit.
So they come up, create the stuff, and give it to the dudes.
They create it, and they always, I mean, there's nobody like those guys. When those guys would come out and do something, and they'd show the, even second generation Blue Men, like the real, like the high level guys who do training. And
yeah.
Those guys are very, very good.
It's like a Scientology or something. Huh?
Yeah,
Blue Man Group. Level 3.
We would talk about drinking the Kool-Aid.
Jim Jones.
You kind of join up, and it's a good gig. That's a thing. You know, it really is good, and it was. I know Blue Man was great for me. I loved it, and it was a great company. I made great money. I toured the world. It fucking ruled, and we really did. Especially early on, we really did fucking rock. It really the show really had a fucking energy.
Well, you got good guy. I mean, you got you, and I mean, people don't know you, but you play the shit out of your instrument.
Thanks.
And if you see him right now, he kind of looks like a Peter Criss right now.
I get that, especially with a little salt. salt in my pepper.
Yeah, he's got a little Peter Criss going.
It's the cover. If you know the cover of Peter Criss, Let Me Rock You.
That's it.
Yeah.
Then you'll know what this guy looks like.
Heavy. I get that from that guy. Most of the band is, or not most, but a lot of the band are big Kiss fans.
So now you're in 12 years. Recently, you're out. How long ago did you get out?
I got injured in October.
What happened?
I was in a rehearsal. We were rehearsing for the new show, and I tripped over a cable, and I dislocated my shoulder.
Yeah.
And really badly, and they had to do surgery. And after I did the surgery, I couldn't move my arm, and I still can't in certain ways that are required for the show.
I'm
just now starting to play bass again.
Wow.
But as we were saying, doing this gig is a lot more than just playing bass. You know, so you're playing other weird instruments.
Yeah.
You're also doing dances in the show. There's also a light suit.
So what happened? You tripped over a cord and
tripped over a cable and fell and ripped my shoulder out of its socket.
Man, old man shit.
Total old man shit.
That's some old man.
I know.
Like young, you just fall over and then you'd still be playing.
No, it's like I broke my hip. My hip, man.
Yeah, you're all fucking like Steve Perry on
us. It's rough, man.
So you fall and now you go like, I'm fucked. Like you lay in there like, oh, this fucking hurts.
It fucking hurt. We had our drum tech who really great guy, Jeff Ockletree. He did Steve Smith from Journey for years.
Yeah.
He comes over and pulls the old Mel Gibson in like Lethal Weapon. He's got a punches it back, gets it back in.
Wow. You mean it's popped out?
It's popped out. He gets it back in. And I go to the emergency room, and that was kind of it. I just kind of went to work one day to rehearse the new show, and my career ended right there.
Wow.
That was it.
That's and fucking crazy,
right? It was
right?
Kind of crazy. I'm kind of, you know.
Now, Blue Man Group Insurance?
It's okay. They did right by me, and everything's totally cool.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, it was sort of a shock. We just signed a 10-year deal with the Monte Carlo, and I wasn't really planning on calling it that day.
Yeah, no
but
shit.
I'm starting to play bass again, which is great. You
right.
Know? I'm not really up to par yet. The way I always say is that I can't really do my proper Gene Simmons thing. You know, where you run your,
finger
up into the E string.
Yeah. Owls raised by the demon.
Yeah. So I can't, you know, the shoulder, it's just really extending the arm out. Anyway, it sucks. It hurts.
Right.
But that's just the deal.
And there's probably some guy right behind you going, fuck yeah.
Ready to take it. It's kind of like the NFL like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
right.
And we all do play injured. That's the thing. Over the years, we all played injured. We all have, you have tons of issues. Also, we're not getting any younger. I mean, anybody still
playing. Your hands get all sore.
Anybody playing these days knows that. It's just part of the deal. You get older, you're still rocking, you hurt. That's the deal.
So they gave you some money to leave?
It all worked out.
You can't talk about it.
It all worked out.
I know you can't talk about it.
It all worked out. It all worked out. Well, it worked out, and fortunately, you know, I'm engaged, which is great. I got a great, great chick, and we're spending a lot of time in Northern California, so I'm back up in the Bay more.
Yeah, are you moving out of Vegas?
I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
We'll
I mean,
see.
Why would you stay here?
You know,
I'm trying to get the Vegas
good,
lure.
It's a good question. Myself personally, I don't. If I'm not doing Blue Man,
mm-hmm.
I don't really have any reason to be here.
Yeah.
You know, except for my lady works here. And I, you know, everyone in our Blue Man company has gotten older. I mean, you ask any rock band these days.
Yeah.
Once you've been together for 12 years, you're not hanging out all that much anymore.
No. I mean,
everyone's got houses and wives, kids.
Yeah, you're not hanging with those dudes.
You know, it just doesn't work that much anymore.
Yeah.
And so as far as our network goes, what was so tight 12 years ago, like any band,
yep.
You know, there's wives, kids, houses.
Life.
Life. So my ties to Vegas really were through the company and through my friends and through the show.
Yeah.
And so as the show becomes a less part of my life, Vegas is becoming less part of it all, you know, less of a part. So.
What do you see, like, when you're working? Like, I've worked in this casino for 7 days. you see some weird shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've been here 12 years. But when you're in a casino for hours and hours like you or I, I mean, you've been 12 years.
Yeah.
You see the weirdest shit, right? It's like and the whole lifestyle is weird. It's cigarette smoke nonstop.
Yeah, the wheel of fortune.
Yeah, that
you
thing.
Know, the beepies and the.
You hear that over and over. The fucking slot machines. Wheel of fortune.
Yeah.
The food, the fucking, the heat. Everything about it is all synthetic. Synthetic, the water.
It's really what you make of it. You get your own little world. You get your friends or your chick, and you get your rock show, and you do your thing, man. You just got to really, it's really kind of a self-contained little universe that you create, you know?
Well, what I find the most difficult of working here is here more than anywhere on the planet, people come and it's party.
Oh, yeah, it's exhausting.
And you aren't party.
It's exhausting. I mean, I can't tell you how many friends come to town.
Yeah.
And they're like, woo, here we go, man. Look, man, I work. My gig is I got to play tonight or tomorrow night or, you know, in a couple hours.
Yeah, I play every night.
Yeah.
8:30 and 10:30.
Yeah, man.
And it's like, it's exhausting.
I got tired of having hangovers. You know what I mean? And near the end of the Blue Man, you know, career of mine, it was like, you know, I got tired of coming in tired. You just, you know, you go out, you have a few drinks with your friends. It's hot. You're dehydrated. It's easy to be wiped out in this city, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
To put it mildly. And so it just, it's just something you gotta face head on is, you know, what state of mind do you want to be in when you're coming into work? You know, I just didn't want to have a hangover or be tired.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And at first, you know, woo, yeah, party Vegas, nonstop, let's go. But that gets old pretty quick.
Yeah, it does, right?
You got to realize what you got to do, not only to get through the show, but to get through the show, you know, and enjoy it. You know, when you do a show and you're a little tired or wiped out, that's no fun.
That's work.
It's work, and I had a great gig. Blue Man, it was a wonderful job, man. I loved playing music with my friends, for the audience, and the show we were doing. It was really a blast.
Right.
And so the only time it was at all a drag is if you're a little wiped out. And just I got tired of doing that to myself because it's just no fun. It's no good. So.
You think you can't go back to Blue Man Group, right?
Well, you know, I don't know. The deal is right now is I can't, my shoulder can't go certain directions.
Right.
And parts of the show I can't do.
Would you go back?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. I'm
because right now, you're kind of like me. I played music 25 years, and then I was like, well, I got to, you know, now I'm doing comedy, and I really don't ever see going back to music ever again. I'm a comedian. I'm going to be a comedian until I drop dead.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. It's kind of a big change.
Yeah, because you're 40, and you're fucking barely, you played bass all your life.
Yeah, I got a second. I've been playing clubs since I was 15.
Yeah, so now you're like, well, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't
your money's
know.
Going to dry out,
I don't
right?
know. Absolutely.
Yeah, so then what are you going to do, work at Guitar Center?
I got no.
And you can't write a book. We just talked about it.
Yeah, right.
They won't let you write a book.
I can't say certain things. Well, I can't say anything bad.
Right, right. You can't say anything
so,
bad.
So the whole thing is...
I'll tell you guys next week what he said.
it's just a question of I got a whole second half of my life to figure out. And we'll see, again, if at some point I can start playing again. But again, with Blue Man Group, it's not just playing bass.
Yeah,
It's a whole...
It's physical.
It's again, it's zither, Chapman Stick,
before I cut
dances.
Before I cut you out.
Yeah, what's up?
You brought a CD, you did.
Yes.
Mac, tell us a little bit about this real quick.
This is a record that I did a couple years back. I produced, engineered, played on, and worked with Jason McEnroth, great drummer.
Played in Rollins.
He was in Rollins Band for years. He's with Blue Man Group now.
He's in Blue Man Group.
Yeah, he's playing drums for Blue Man.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, and so him and great guitar player Billy O'Malley played on it, and it's Jason McEnroth's tunes, and I helped with the songs, and the record's called Mac... the band is called Mac. The record's called Pay to Play.
Yep.
And
he sings on it.
He's singing and playing drums. And for live, we got Bloss Elias from Slaughter to play drums for live shows.
Right.
And
you guys go out and play live? Or you don't now, but did
I don't
you?
Now, but we did. Yeah, when the record first dropped, we went out and did a bunch of gigs, and so it's a really, you know, it's a really cool record. It's really straight ahead rock. It's sort of punk rock Kiss.
That's
how I describe it. Because he was in Rollins Band, and we were both Kiss fans. So it's like, you know, traditional rock tunes with a little extra kick in the ass. So it's good rock. I really liked it, and with Bloss and Billy to round out the band, I'm really proud of the record. So it's
cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
And where can they find it?
Let's see. Boy, I know that you can just go online,
illegally download it. Right?
Of course, it goes without saying.
That's what people say.
Anyway, the band is Mac. The record is Pay to Play. And go online, you can find it.
You got a Twitter?
You can find it. I do not have a Twitter.
Wow,
it confuses me.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah,
well,
I just traded in my Razor for an iPhone 3.
Yeah, we just talked about that. You're one of those guys. I love those guys.
Totally
like
low tech.
You know, like. Like when I'm touring in the Midwest, I'll be like, yeah, Twitter, they're like, yeah, we don't really do much of that stuff.
We don't do that Twitter around here, boy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, people, like you were always old school. I'm old school in a lot of ways, but I'm new school in a lot of ways.
You got to stay high tech in the biz, man.
You do.
That was the thing about the gig, too, is when I joined that gig, you know, there was no checking your schedule online.
Yeah.
You know, you got a printout for the week, and if you're playing Wednesday, it'll say so right there. Other than that, I didn't really need to check much of anything.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, because you were just working.
That's my gig. I sound check at 5. If I'm playing, I look at the thing.
Yeah.
Wednesday, if I'm playing, I'm playing. If I'm not, I'm not. Cut and dry. That's it.
Still playing the Rickenbacker?
I got the Rick.
And who's your favorite bass players?
Favorite bass players? Oh, has to be Geezer Butler.
Yes.
And Paul McCartney.
Yes. Wings era?
No, I don't dig Wings.
Oh, God.
Thumbs down on Wings.
I love Wings.
No, I love what George and John did after the Beatles, but I think Wings is bullshit.
Oh, God. I think Band on the Run's one of my favorite songs
great,
ever.
Great tune. He's got his gems, but I just think...
I don't like all of Wings, but 5 of the songs hurt me hard.
I think what George and John did was so much more real and impactful, where I think McCartney kind of kept doing... You know, this kind of like surface.
You're not into the Ringo stuff?
That goes without saying. Yeah. Goes without saying, man.
All right. Well, great to see you, man.
You too, bro.
We're going to go to the pinball museum now. Fuck it. We're going to go play pinball with our Razor phones.
And we're going to go play Kiss pinball, of course.
Yeah, Kiss. They got AC/DC there.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, thanks for tuning in. My man MK there, Blue Man Group, telling us what it's like in Vegas.
Thanks for having me, Delroy.
Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, subscribe and write some reviews on iTunes there and email me. I've been getting some great emails from you guys, DeanDelRay@yahoo.com. Super cool. And tell a friend about Let There Be Talk. And go see Blue Man Group if you're in Vegas, or some great comedy at the Vegas Laugh Factory. That's where I'm at right now. If you come to Vegas, go to the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana. Thanks for tuning in, guys. See you next time.